Welcome to another episode of Fashion Utopia. I am your host, Kelly Dowd. This week, we focus on the concluding part of fashion psychology, embracing differences and attaining self-actualization with our super guest, Michael Kessel. Michael Kessel is a design strategist focused on the study of emotions. He is the principal founder of Playground of Empathy, an organization whose mission is to spread empathy through design. What a great honor to have you here, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me here, Kelly. I'm really happy to be part of your Design Utopia and serve the public that listens to you.
From my research about you, I discovered that you are, I would say, a very authentic person. And even sitting next to you, by the way you dress, I can feel it. So what have you learned from dressing authentically?
Well, authenticity is something we have to decide for ourselves. The way that we want to express ourselves, if we ask ourselves, how do I be authentic in the way that I'm dressing, which I think so many of us already are asking that question, we're already in a process of dressing authentically. So it really depends on who you are, but I think the question is the most important thing. We can either dress for others or we can dress for ourselves. And asking yourself, what is authentic to me? And then letting your eyes and your fingers kind of choose the things that you're going to wear based on that question is already wonderful.
Wow. That's amazing. Thanks for sharing that with us. So talking about your creative projects that promotes empathy and inclusivity, could you take us through the adventure of creating Playground of Empathy?
Yeah. So Playground of Empathy is trying to answer the question, how do we design spaces that allow us to be more empathic as individuals and create more empathy for our communities, our colleagues, our friends, our family, by really understanding that our differences are something that is are normal and to be celebrated. And Playground of Empathy's experience that also you experienced is called the Walk in My Shoes experience, right? And
yes.
So on the outside, it's a giant sparkly shoe. It's 8.5 feet tall and 9 feet long, and it's sparkly and big. On the inside, it's like this walk-in closet where you get to see what it's like to walk in the shoes of a different gender identity, of a different race, of a different socioeconomic background or age. And by putting on items of clothing that belong to this individual and seeing yourself transform in a mirror, almost like you're in this walk-in closet. Like, imagine that you're walking into someone else's walk-in closet.
Right.
And you're trying on their items of clothing. But as you're in there, you're hearing stories from their voice that are telling you why this item of clothing represents vulnerability for them, why it represents confidence or defiance through the lens of their race or through the lens of their gender. And by hearing these stories while you're putting on their clothing, you're really feeling this transformation happening. And then the mirror becomes a movie screen, and you get to see these point of view perspective films that are reenactments of real moments in their life. So not only are you wearing their clothing, but you're also interacting in the way that they have to, in the way that society is asking them to every day, just based on how they express themselves physically. And in between these films, you're asked, what would you say in that situation? Or how did that make you feel? Where did you feel that in your body? Questions like that. And so through these interactions, you're really learning how to see things from their perspective, and therefore how to get outside of your own perspective and become more empathic in the way that you communicate with yourself and with others.
Well, dear listeners, I have had my own experience of Playground of Empathy. I walked in the shoe and, you know, I listened to the experience of another person. And I must say this, you have to try it because it will really give you, you know, that total understanding of how other people feel in terms of, you know, what makes them vulnerable. So there's a whole lot of elements to gather from this. Interestingly, Michael chose clothing, you know, as a tool to convey this information. And I am curious, you know, to know this. why was clothing a medium of conveying your message and as an essential tool of this experience?
Yeah, I think it's the same reason, to a certain degree, that Fashion Utopia exists as a podcast. It's because clothing is such a strong, has such a strong relationship with how we express ourselves.
Right.
That relationship with how we feel about ourselves, and also the relationship and how we want to be perceived and how we want to be identified. And so no matter what your identity or expression, no matter where you are on the spectrum, if you ask someone, like if we asked your listeners now to think about the item of clothing that was the first item of clothing that they ever chose in their own life, so not what their parents gave them or their caretakers gave them to wear, but what was the first item that meant something to you? I think if we think about it, we can all think about one item. Maybe it was like a snowsuit that we had when we were 5 years old. Maybe it was maybe not if you're from Nigeria. maybe it was a dress that we didn't want to wear. Maybe it was a hat that we wore to disguise our hair. Because our parents wouldn't let us cut it, right? There's all these items of clothing that have this emotional symbol for us. And by talking about these items of clothing, it's very relatable. So even if it's not an item of clothing that you would wear, by putting it on and seeing yourself transform and hearing this person tell a story about how this item of clothing meant this thing for them can be really powerful. And that's why we chose clothing.
Wow. So what item of clothing would you say as a child or as an adult that really meant something to you?
That's funny. I ask people that question most of the time. Most of the time people don't ask me. There was a shirt that I had as a child that had a dinosaur on it. And there was also a shirt that had constellations, like planets, and it was glow in the dark. And I'm talking about both of these items of clothing right now because I started singing opera when I was very young, when I was 7 years old.
Wow.
And since then, I was always in an artistic environment, always in a creative expression environment. But there's always been this part of me that's been a scientist. And I remember loving those items of clothing and wanting to be a paleontologist or an oceanographer as a child, but having this creative career. And now I get to be a designer that works with neuroscientists and psychologists on emotions research.
Wow.
And so these items of clothing are very symbolic for me, for a part of me that I felt like I wasn't able to express at that time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, that is impressive. Wow. To me, I would say my experience is totally different from yours.
Yeah, what's your item of clothing that has strong symbology? Please tell me.
I do have a lot, but there's one particular one that till today, when I see any clothing that looks like it, right, my mind just go back. I just have a quick retrospect of it. So when I was 12 years old, my mom bought me this checker. You know, it's just like it's like linen, but it's black and red stripe. But we had a heavy rain, and for some reason, I was very careless with it, and you know, water just washed it away. It's sad, but when I think about it, you know, I still just like, oh my god, just like yesterday when it all happened. Well, thanks for asking me that question. That's really, you know, interesting. So how can we see people that don't look and act like us as a unique and our interconnected relatives?
Yeah, so that's a question I think about implicit bias. On a fundamental level, it's a question about how do we take assumptions that we're making and zoom into them, take the time to really check our assumptions and see what we're assuming about people.
Right.
So that we can create different pathways in our mind, in our brain, that allow us to understand people from a different perspective. Can you ask me that question again?
Yes, sure. How can we see people that don't look and act like us as unique and our interconnected relatives?
Yeah, so I have a lot of quotes from neuroscience and psychology that I could answer this question with, but I think the quote that speaks to me most of all is that the three things that people want most in life are to be seen, heard, and understood.
Wow.
Which is a quote from Oprah.
Wow.
And I love this quote because, first of all, she's seen, heard, and understood a lot of people, so she must know what she's talking about.
Right.
And second of all, even in the way that you asked the question,
right,
of how can we see people that don't look and act like us as unique, I think the important word is see. You know, how can we see people at all? How can we take time to really notice what's happening in our environment?
Right.
And then slow down our assumptions to the point where we can ask ourselves, is this the thing I really want to be thinking? You know, and is this serving me? Is this the thought that serves me best or serves our conversation best?
Wow. Thank you so much for that approach. Why is it difficult for people to embrace change and other identity?
I think that certain changes can be easier to embrace and certain ones can be harder. And it depends on how much our environment has told us that something's one way or the other. So it's hard because, well, actually, you know, in a way I think it's not hard, and in a way I think it is, and it really depends on who you are, how many times have you been asked to change in your life. If you grow up in an environment where you haven't needed to change much, that can make it harder to change. For example, if you learn a language besides your native language before the age of 4, then neural pathways have been created in your mind that make it easier to learn new languages.
Right.
Even if you forgot that language as a child, your mind has already been more exposed to wanting to make that change of language. And I think you can look at change in general in a similar way. So if you look at language as a metaphor, the more that we've been exposed to different opportunities and options and ways of being and ways of life, the more open we are to accept those as realities that we could also be embracing. So I think in order to make change easier, it's really about exposure. It's really about putting yourself out there and asking lots of questions to people, understanding the reasons why they do things and not assuming that you know them.
So I will say being curious.
Curiosity is such an important part of change. Yes.
Good. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, to me, I tell people that fashion really plays a vital role in our life, because when you walk into a place, aside the color of your skin, the first thing people notice is what you're wearing. And some people can even become Judge Judy, you know, or John Rivers, you know, may I so rest in peace. Immediately, they'll be like, oh my God, they just size you up based on what you're wearing. Right, so how would you describe the science of fashion and how it influences human behavior?
I think that to answer that question, the first thing we need to understand is how emotions are made and why our brain thinks. And to quote Dr. Lisa Feldman Barrett, the main function of our brain is to be able to maintain an allostasis. And what allostasis means is essentially like body balance. It's a, or body budgeting. It's a way for the mind and the chemicals in our body and our biology to be able to balance itself out so that we're in a good state of being to be able to function well and ultimately, you know, to procreate or to continue our lives at least in any event in a way that feels good to us. And so if the mind is there to allow us to feel balanced, then the only benefit to putting people in categories is to be able to understand how we can feel safe in an environment. And so just like when we were cavemen, as it were, out, or cave people, out out in nature, when we saw a beast with large teeth, it let us know that we had to make certain shifts in our environment that would allow for more safety. And I think when we're looking at fashion, we're thinking about mating, we're thinking about friendship, we're thinking about social relationships, we're trying to understand how do people fit in the category that will be the most, that will allow for my future and my present to be in the best state possible. And this is something that's natural in terms of the way that our minds work. So the way that we look at fashion is very much a part as the way that we look at our own well-being.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate, you know, your points in that. So this question is really tailored to self discovery and actualization. So how can we use clothing as a tool for self discovery and actualization? And what is the process?
Mm-hmm. So from the perspective of a designer who does emotions research, I would have to say that we're constantly having dialogues with ourselves about the meaning of the things that we do and the meaning of the things that we wear. And by asking ourselves this question and then putting these colors and fabrics and items on our body, it sort of becomes part of that dialogue, right? It's an expression of that dialogue that we're having. And I think it's really important to know how to balance that out with the world economy and the space that we're in, so that even if we're having this ongoing dynamic dialogue, we can make choices that allow the items of clothing that we're wearing to be sustainable in our own lives, and sustainable within the entire world.
Oh, wow. Thank you. So over the years, people have used fashion to express the way they feel on the inside, which also, in some situations, represents their gender alliance. What can people learn from drag as a tool of self-actualization?
Well, I think that drag as a self-actualization is probably a question that would be best asked to someone who's in the drag community. So I just wanted to start by saying that. I don't think I'm the most qualified person to answer that question from a personal standpoint. I would say that we need to find ways to work within the cultural norms and the cultural oppressions, and that, as far as I'm familiar, and I could be wrong, I think that drag is a really big part of that voice coming out. The voice that says that I am acceptable and to be celebrated for who I am. And that's something that we're all looking for. So I think we can all benefit from those who are brave to express themselves fully for how they feel and to express themselves beyond the oppressive norms that society has created.
You know, to that point, this popular show, RuPaul's Drag Race, the first ever drag show, RuPaul Charles, who happens to be the founder or, you know, an anchor of the show, you know, he created this experience for people to come, you know, in, share their creativity, what they are made of, you know, what they believe they can contribute to the larger society. But at the end of the day, the show turned out to be a safe haven for people that believe, okay, they are impersonating a particular celebrity or they are creating a persona that is not, you know, who they are as a person. But gradually they transition into getting to that point of, oh my God, wow, this is how I feel, and this is this mask is really how I feel on the inside. And as a gradual process, they come to light with it and come to acceptance that, okay, this is who I am, this is who I want to be. And, you know, the show is a proponent of, you know, of acts like that. And that is why I asked you that question, because with what you do, you know, with Playground, you know, of empathy, you know, people picking up that clothes, even though they are not wearing it, but listening to it, just looking at the, you know, the pieces, the accessories, and or whatever it is, it could be shoe or whoever experience it is, it feels like, oh my God, okay, so this is this person's reality. I can feel it. I can relate with it. Yeah. So when people are in the continuous process of self rediscovery and actualization, how can they embrace a sustainable fashion?
That's such a huge challenge, and it's such an important question. I think it's really one of the central questions of our time. You know, and I won't go over the statistics of waste and the industry of fashion. I would recommend watching Patriot Act on Netflix if you have access to it. There's an episode on fast fashion, which I think sums it up really, really well.
Sure.
To answer your question, I think that it's really important to know how to make choices with items that you're going to feel good having for many, many years. And to really educate yourself about what fast fashion is doing to us as a society, and to really be conscious of who you're complimenting for what they're wearing, which is a really tricky thing because we want to be supportive of our friends, and nobody wants to walk around telling people that they shouldn't buy things from H&M, Zara, or Topshop. And at the same time, when we're doing that, we're really, it's a tragedy of the commons. When we're doing that, we're creating a world that we do not want to be living in, that we don't want to be raising children in. And so the solution, I think, is subtle, and it has to do with starting to look at really where things are coming from and be able to learn how to engage people in dialogues and ask questions that allow them to also think about the purchases that they're making.
Wow, wow. You know, an interesting fact is, as of 2018, the fashion industry actually generated $3 billion as revenue. Again, and I am someone that shop at H&M, you know, and Zara, and I felt guilty, you know. I went, you know, to hear that from my research, and now I'm like, okay, I cannot be part of the conversation, you know, since because you have to, you know, walk the walk, you know, whatever you are saying to people, you have to live by it. So I have decided, okay, one way I could contribute to, you know, the conversation in a positive light is to, you know, shop local and buy local, especially from local designers, because we have designers all around us, and we have fabric makers all around us too. So shop local, buy local, everything local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think even when you're buying local, it's really good to understand where the fabrics are coming from.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not an easy battle.
Mm-mm,
It's not easy to make good choices. So I think, you know, there was a statistic that I heard recently that if you hold on to an item for 6 months longer than you would normally, and if everybody in America did that, that would all already have a gigantic impact on the amount of oil that is used in the country. I'm sorry, I don't have the specific numbers next to me, but you can also watch that episode of Patriot Act.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, it's not only a matter of, you know, I don't shop at fast fashion industries. I try to really avoid it as much as possible. However, if you're going to buy an H&M piece, buy it at a thrift shop.
Right.
Right. If you're going to buy an H&M piece new, hold on to it for 2 years instead of for 6 months.
Right.
These things make a huge impact.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Thank you so much for sharing that. So we are, you know, coming to an end of this episode, but there are two key questions I always ask my wonderful guest. And sorry, you're not escaping any of those questions. So as someone that loves color, pattern, and from what I've seen so far, you are beautifully styled, and I love it so much. How would you characterize your fashion utopia?
My fashion utopia, so something that I like to do sometimes when I'm giving talks or speeches is I ask everyone to close their eyes and think about the future that they want to live in. Think about their personal version of an ideal future that gets created by us all doing the work that means the most to us and that's going to be the best for the world that they want to live in. Mm. And when I ask people to close their eyes and think about that, I ask them, how are people looking at each other in this future? How are people treating each other? What is the expression on people's faces? And so I think my fashion utopia doesn't have a set of colors or a set of patterns in particular. It has people who are really seeing each other, who are really understanding that all the different variant choices that people are making are wonderful, and that they're wonderful because they're different. It's a utopia where the expressions on people's faces are ones of acceptance and joy, which is the embodiment of all emotions, and that all of those emotions are embracing the person that we've decided to be on that particular day, the identity that we feel and the way we're choosing to express that identity. People accepting that and embracing that is already a fashion utopia for me.
Wow, Michael, I must say this. I want to live in your utopia, I like it, it's gorgeous. It sounds pretty interesting. And my final question for you is, do you have a daily buzzword, and what is it?
Yeah. Do I have a daily buzzword? I really love the word granular.
Granular?
Yeah. I use it a lot. And I really like this word because it means thinking in detail, right? It means taking time to put words to how you're feeling in a nuanced way, right? It's not just, how are you? I'm good. How are you? What if you could say three words instead of good? You know, maybe good is even one of them. I'm good, feeling a little excited, and I've been a bit sleepy lately, right? That sort of granularity can add so much dynamic to our conversations, to who we are. It can give people the opportunity to see each other much more for who they are and the full spectrum of themselves. So I encourage people to be granular in the way that they look at themselves, and granular in the way that they have conversations with each other, and granular especially in the way that they express their emotions. There's lots of studies that show that being granular in the way that you express your emotions can be beneficial towards a long life, towards bountiful health, and certainly towards more body balance.
Wow. Micah, words alone cannot express how grateful I am.
Trying to express them in words, though. Tell me five words that make you feel that you feel about me being here.
You are amazing. I feel enlightened. I feel schooled. You know, I feel. I just feel. I just feel amazing to be.
No,
to
that
be
was
next
three.
To you.
I need two more words.
Two more words.
Yes.
Fabulous.
Uh huh.
And
more.
The last word is more authentic.
More authentic. I love it, Kelly. So I hope that everybody is listening got the benefit of those five words and saw the difference in the last two words and how important they were.
Thank you so much, Micah.
Thank
it's
you, Kelly.
It's an honor to be in the studio with you. Thank you. And I wish you all the best in your journey.
Thank you.
You know, you are a very creative individual, and I see you creating more immense experience, and I can't wait to be part of your next project.
Thank you. I wish us all the best, and it was a joy to be here. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much. A tremendous appreciation to Anchor, Micah Castle, and all of you fabulous listeners out there for making this episode possible. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and support this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, Google Cast, and anywhere else you listen to your podcast. We wish you and your entire family a happy holiday, and please stay warm this season. Merry Christmas.